Hey folks, I'm Simon Ward, your host for this weekly podcast. Over the years, I've come to realise that achieving one's goals as a triathlete is not possible unless you support this with good nutrition, excellent recovery, develop a robust framework through mobility and strength training, and have a happy, balanced work and family life. Each of these elements contributes to our race day performances and gives us the best chance of turning those dreams into reality. Each week, my goal is to introduce you to the experts and thought leaders in each of these fields to help you squeeze the most from your life and enjoy racing success. So, without further ado, let's crack on with this week's guest. Hey, welcome back, listeners, and welcome back. He was on the show a few weeks ago, Graham Brookhouse. Nice to be back, my friend.
Yes, it's very very nice to be on these shows. I really enjoy them, and I think we work well together.
Yeah, we do. I'm pretty certain we get good feedback. Oh, I've never seen it, but I always think we have a bit of banter and some lighthearted moments, but we equally give some very good content, some good answers. So I think that is exactly what you want out of a podcast. At least I would if I was listening to them. So thank you in advance for continuing to return to the show. Now, if I can get you to cast your mind back a couple of weeks ago to when we last spoke on the podcast and we were answering all those readers' questions, one particular question was about triathlon on a budget, I think. And I think it was one of the questions we did towards the end, so we didn't have a lot of time to cover that. However, since then, I got a reader question, which I am going to share with you now. So this was from Scott Harriman. So thank you in advance, Scott, for sending this to us. So I'll give you the full version. Firstly, Simon, I would like to say I really enjoy your podcast. So there you go. There's some good feedback. And the way you keep the info simple and easy to listen to ensures I manage to retain the useful details. I've been doing triathlons for 5 years now, and in this short space of time, I am surprised at how the cost seems to be rising, not only for race entries, but also the basic equipment required. What I find more confusing is the various forums I'm on that seem to be overloaded with advice on equipment, but no one seems to recommend budget kit, only top brands or top ranges of equipment. So my question would be, I would love to hear some experienced triathletes, that's me and you, Graham.
Right.
I would love to hear from some experienced triathletes is this. What equipment needs can be budget and what cannot? So I think if I interpret it there, he's saying are there things you really need to spend money on? And are there some things you can get the basic models for? He goes on to finish off by saying, I know this is a personal thing, but cost would be a huge barrier for a lot of people. I'm in a total agreement with him there. And in my opinion, not always necessary. Personally, I started with cheaper gear, which worked for me at the time, and have since increased over the years. Right. So, Graham, just remind the listeners what year you did your first triathlon, please, and then I'll do the same.
The first triathlon I ever did, I think, was 1987.
Right. Same as me then.
It was a small, probably, it's either a sprint or Olympic distance type race. It was in Highworth, which is quite near Swindon. It was a swimming pool swim. We were just doing it while I was still doing pentathlon. A guy called Chris Humpage. Do you remember Chris?
I do. Chris, he was an exceptional swimmer, wasn't he, Chris? And he used to... was he sponsored by Total Fitness Bath as well?
He used to win
quite a lot of the Total Fitness and 220 series, didn't he?
Yeah, really good. Really good canoeist as well. Did a bit of pentathlon, good friend of mine. And he said, oh, come and do this thing called triathlon where you've got to swim, ride your bike and run. And it was like literally turned up, did it. And he said, how did you find the run? I said, yes, I did find it extremely strange getting off the bike with cycling legs and trying to run. Because it was nothing that I'd experienced ever before, because I hadn't even done any bike training, so it was even more specific, the effect of that. So that was quite a while ago now. I won't even calculate how many years ago that was.
So a pool swim out onto the bike. What equipment did you have for that race? Can you recall?
What would I have had? The swim just swimming trunks, pair of goggles, probably not even a swim hat. The bike was, I either had a bike lying around or I probably just borrowed a bike. And I had all the running equipment, as in just a pair of running shoes. Did bike in my running kit, which I put on after the swim. And that was it.
Do you recall if it was compulsory for you to wear a helmet back then?
I don't recall.
My first triathlon was around the same time as yours. It was also a pool-based swim. It had a different format because you had to do the bike second. You had to do the run second, and then the bike was the last bit. And there was a 15-minute gap in between each, which enabled you to get from the pool to the run start, where you had to hand. I think I've told this story before, but you had to take a little 4x3 card. So they wrote your swim time on it, and then somebody did some maths and worked out what your swim time was. And then they added 15 minutes onto that, include down to the exact seconds. So if you came out of the water at 10 minutes past 2 and 30 seconds, you then had to be at the run start at 25 past 2 and 30 seconds.
Yeah, and that's when you started.
And then the same when you got back off the run, you had to go and get your bike out, your car, and make your way up to the bike start, which is about half a mile away, and you handed your card in again and all this stuff. So that was mine, but I remember having one of those hairnet type of helmets. You know, it wasn't even a polystyrene or whatever they have now. It was just like a hairnet.
Yeah.
I'll see if I can find an example one and put it on the show notes. But and I don't even think you had to have one. I just felt that it would be better if I fell off my bike to have one, although actually on reflection, I don't think it would have helped my head much at all. I'd got a bike that I'd had when I was a student. So because I'd been away in Australia, I don't think I'd ridden it for 2 years. So I just oiled the chain and that was it. And it worked fine. It had 10 speed. I built it myself. And I had a pair of silver, high-tech Silver Shadow running shoes.
And when you say 10 speed, you actually mean the rear cassette only had 5 cogs on it, so it was
correct.
Literally 10 speed, wasn't it? As in,
and like everybody did in those days, you changed gears with some levers that were mounted about 2 or 3 inches down the down tube. On the right hand side, there was the lever that changed the position of the derailleur at the rear cassette, and then on the left hand side, there was the one that switched from large to small chain wheel.
Yeah, and then you had those ballooning cables coming off somewhere like the brake.
Oh, you could, the sort that you could strangle yourself on if you were unlucky. So no aero. Nobody had even come out with aero bars. I think they came out a year or two later, in that year when Greg LeMond won the Tour de France on the last day. So until then, we were all on effectively road racing bikes, really. Drop handlebars. So I didn't need a wetsuit for that first swim like you. I just had a pair of Speedos, a pair of goggles. They gave you a little hat to wear. I ran around in running kit with my high-tech Silver Shadows. So I thought they were fairly swanky at the time, but they weren't really. They were leisure shoes for people who wanted to look like sporty rather than running shoes. So. And on the bike,
I would imagine there would have been some people running in Dunlop Green Flash.
Oh, without a doubt. In fact, I think before I even decided to upgrade to these, I would have done my running in Dunlop Green Flash.
We wonder why we get injured.
but I think what all of this goes to show is, Graham, the sort of equipment that we had then was far behind the technical quality you get now from even entry-level bikes.
Yeah, correct.
You know, you could go to Halfords and you could buy £1,000 for a basic road machine. It would have Shimano 105 gears on it, but they'd be index gears. They work sweetly. You'd probably have at least 10 or 11 sprockets on the cassette at the back, so you've got 22 gears. You probably have clip-in pedals, although that's I'm not sure if all bikes come with those now. I'm not sure even if I had toe clips then. I might have just had platform pedals that I had to ride around on. So, you'd got nothing to pull up against. And I can't even remember if I had a pair of cycle shoes. I might have done the bike ride like you in my running shoes.
Yeah.
Which, because we didn't know any better, felt fine.
Yeah, no, it was fine. Yeah. It was almost like a toss. It was a toss up between all. But I can see some people wearing these bike shoes, but I'm not so sure that's going to be quicker because I've got my running shoes already on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you know, if we go back a few years into duathlon,
yeah.
Do you remember those platforms that they built, those speed platforms where you could wear your running shoes to cycling because they were doing run, bike, run, and the 2 minutes that you saved in transition by not having to take your shoes on and off each time was quite a big chunk that you could gain on the run, wasn't it? So, yeah. So what I'm really trying to say here, Graham, is that our entry-level equipment was way below what people have now or what people think they need, and yet we were able to do triathlons perfectly fine. Probably like me, you got to the end of your first one, and whilst you reflected like I did that your legs hurt and you didn't know what all that was about, and when you'd walked out of the pub a few hours later, you thought that was a proper blast. I loved it. I'm going to do a bit more of that.
I think. There's almost like that you can draw quite a strong line between people that do their first ever triathlon. And I don't know what the percentage figure would be, but I think for that very first go at the sport, people generally will just, there must be a lot of, it might be a poll for you to do on one of your Facebook pages, did you do your first triathlon? Was it a matter of just rock up and do it because somebody said it'd be a good idea and you borrowed a bike or you had a bike and that was it? You didn't really specifically go out and bike it. But then you either go, I really enjoyed that, I want to kick on and do it a bit more seriously, or I didn't enjoy it and you never do another one. Mm. So it's probably actually more to do with your second and third one, where that would bring me to my point where the marketeers have done a really good job at presenting this need for all of this kit.
Yeah. And I do think that a lot of people are put off by the fact that they don't have a bike. I've helped out at a few Go Try events, which are really designed to get people in and give them a taste of the sport. Very simple, low cost, featured around one venue. They don't have very far to swim, bike or run, and they're encouraged to turn up with any bike. And most people turn up with hybrids or mountain bikes. There aren't many people there turning up on a swanky new triathlon kit. And watching the faces of these people when they cross the finish line, they've had an absolute blast and they've all loved this experience of this new sport that they hadn't tried before. So Scott that wrote to us is not a beginner. He said that he'd been in the sport for 5 years and he worked his way up through the equipment levels. So I guess we can answer this question from two perspectives. If you were a beginner in the sport, let's spend a few minutes talking about what equipment you definitely need and what equipment is surplus to requirements for that first event in order to get going. And we could divide it into the three disciplines. So what do you really need for swimming?
A pair of goggles and a pair of trunks.
Okay. Now, I know a lot of people say, well, what about a wetsuit? Because I'm going to get cold. But as you and I both mentioned, our first events took place in a pool and there was no need for a wetsuit.
Yeah, correct.
So pair of goggles, pair of Speedos. If you're going to do an open water swim, what else do you need?
For competing, just on the swim, are we on about?
Yeah.
Well, we just need your wetsuit then, wouldn't you? And that's it.
Okay. But there are places where you can hire wetsuits.
Yeah.
You told me a story about your first triathlon. I mean, they were back in those days, there wasn't any such thing as
a specific triathlon
wetsuit. Was the people just wearing suits that you would wear for surfing or windsurfing?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They're not ideal for swimming, I don't think. No. You'll tell me better.
Not. No, they're definitely not ideal for swimming. Obviously, depending on the temperature of the water, I mean, there will be some triathlons in the UK in the summer where, it's not, wearing the wetsuit is optional, isn't it? So you wouldn't necessarily definitely need the wetsuit. But assuming the water temperature is such where that would probably be a good idea, then what do you do? There's low-level entry triathlon suits. There's some of the companies you can hire the suits. You can just... I know a few triathlon clubs actually will have five or six suits which they lend out, don't they, for newbies to go and do with their first race.
Well, and I suppose that you could always buy a second-hand wetsuit, couldn't you?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I mean, they're not the neoprene does stretch the neoprene that they have these days, and again, referring back to our first wetsuits, even your first triathlon specific wetsuit, I would guess that even an entry level suit from a relatively unknown manufacturer would be way better quality than the sort of suit and the sort of neoprene you used in your first open water wetsuit swim.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And as cost wise, I know if you went online, I'm not going to plug a specific brand and web sort of website, but it's like most cycling kit websites, when you Google I want to buy that product, one of the first websites that everyone goes to that comes up, and they do like sleeveless wetsuits for £65.
Yes. So,
you know it depends on what you want to use them for. You know, there's you might be looking at doing triathlon, but you might also be looking at doing those run swim events that's becoming quite popular as well. So which I imagine they're fairly cheap to do as well.
So to be honest, when I did my first swim run event, I don't think anybody in the UK or outside of Sweden was making wetsuits for that type of event. So I took an old wetsuit of mine and just cut it off at the sleeves, halfway down the upper arm, and I cut the legs off halfway down, mid thigh point, and that was enough. It lasted for the race. I think I lent it to a friend of mine, and he did the same race the next year. The seam started to unravel then, but it was an old wetsuit, so the point is that you don't have to invest big money to get started, really, do you?
No, definitely not. I mean, is it worth mentioning there are on Facebook Marketplace there are quite a number of sites now where you can pick up secondhand triathlon gear.
Yeah,
it doesn't take much searching to find those.
Yeah, we'll put a link to that into the show notes. The point there being, if you're on a budget, there is lots of places where you can go to get basic equipment to get you started. So at least you're not investing lots of money before you decide whether you actually like the sport. I mean, nothing worse than spending a lot of money on one of those Hoob Archimedes wetsuits to pick brand and then realizing that it wasn't for you, you didn't like it, and you're going to have to get rid of it because you'll never get your money back.
No, exactly. And there is those two supermarkets that are quite like low budget.
Yep.
Like Aldi and Lidl, suppose we can mention them. I can't help but noticing when you're going, I do go around and shop in those, they do tend to sell a lot of bicycle equipment.
I think Aldi were doing wetsuits last year, actually.
It's always, for people new to the sport, well, why not buy the stuff from there? It's not well-known brands per se, but you can get fully functional cycling equipment from them.
Yeah, and once you've decided you like the sport, you can upgrade if necessary. Maybe we'll come back to that later about what things you want to consider upgrading and what things it's unnecessary. You don't get much benefit from upgrading specific things. So let's move on to the bike then. So obviously you need to have a bike you can ride.
Yeah.
It may be that for your first race, you could borrow a bike.
Yeah, for sure. I've done that.
Me too. It wasn't in this country, but somebody offered me the opportunity to do a triathlon somewhere once, and I didn't have any kit with me, so I borrowed a bike. It didn't fit me perfectly, but it was good enough to get me around the 10 miles.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So you need a bike. It's compulsory to wear a helmet these days.
Yeah.
But you need to wear a helmet that is... conforms to the safety standards that are appropriate to British triathlon events. You don't need to wear an aero helmet. You don't need to have a helmet as worn by top Tour de France cyclists.
No. I would also mention at this point how I often see people wearing cycling helmets. Well, I'll put that into context. They've got a cycling helmet on their head. However, I see so many people that actually haven't fitted the helmet to their head. So it's either in the wrong position or it's loose, etc., etc. But, you know, a normal road helmet, if you put your head down and point it to the ground, whether it's buckled up or not, it shouldn't fall off your head. It's, you know, and that's why the back of the helmet, spend some time at the way the helmet is designed to fit the back of your head and adjust it accordingly for that ride, because it's no good having a helmet that if you do have an accident that falls off your head or repositions itself, so it's not protective. You know, that's quite important.
Yeah, and probably worth emphasizing that is the primary purpose and the reason you have to wear a helmet. It's designed to protect your head in the event of an accident where you hit the ground hard.
Yeah.
We've probably both had accidents like that. And I know for certain that, you know, when I broke my collarbone, I fell off on some black ice. Each time I have banged my helmet on the ground, because you can see the marks, but I've had no damage to my head, which I almost certainly would have done if I hadn't been wearing a helmet. So that's the primary purpose for wearing one. As we know that the rider creates the most drag, and if you have to wear a helmet and, you know, it's an odd shaped one, then it's not helping you to reduce drag. But for your first triathlon, the primary reason for wearing a helmet is just to protect your head, and that's
correct,
all.
Yeah.
You probably couldn't wear a rock climbing helmet because it wouldn't meet cycling standards, but there's all sorts of things you could wear that meet those standards, aren't there?
Yeah.
You know, you could wear one of those mountain bike ones with a visor, for instance, and it's going to do the job.
And then again, if at some point you are going to upgrade, well, if you're going to be buying road helmets and then specifically aerodynamic time trial helmets, then you're in the business of buying two lots of helmets. But depending on what you're doing and how hot the country is, etc., that now the market, you can buy very aero road helmets that nearly perform as well as the specific time trial helmet. So again, you can cut down your overall cost by buying one that does all.
Mm. So we've covered the helmet. That's probably the most important thing, because that is compulsory, and without one of those, you're not going to be able to do the race. We've talked about the bike. You can borrow them. If you're going to buy a bike, you can do a triathlon on a mountain bike. Clearly, you're not going to be as fast as somebody who's on a road bike, but if we're talking about somebody who wants to try it out for the first time, then any sort of bike will do. If you want to upgrade to a road bike, then as I said, most entry-level road bikes will be, you know, like the top-level road bikes that are around when we first bought our bikes, weren't they?
Yeah. There's lots of different options now, definitely. But I would say to anybody that hasn't really much biking experience, I would say always buy a road bike first and get those bike handling skills that you're going to need if you then eventually upgrade to a TT bike. Because again, I see too many, relatively less experienced triathletes who haven't got the experience of riding a bike, very quickly upgrading to a time trial bike, and then the next minute they've fallen off, broken the collarbone, and it's like, well, you know, if you don't have the bike handling skills, that's going to happen, especially, you know, you're just increasing the risk.
Yeah, they are a little bit more twitchy, aren't they, time trial bikes? They have a bigger turning circle. The wheel doesn't turn as much, although you never really want to be turning a bike. But they're just a little bit, it's a bit like a high performance car rather than a standard road car, isn't it? And so you need a bit more skill to ride them effectively, fast. We talked about shoes and pedals. If you're starting off, basic pedals with toe clips are good enough, aren't they?
Yeah, for sure, yeah. And probably if you're starting off, you don't want to go down the clipless option because, again, you hear a lot of stories of people not unclipping in time and falling off. So probably it's a good idea to start off with to wear toe clips.
Yeah, or, and if you're uncomfortable wearing those, because you know the downside of those is if you do fall off, your feet don't come away from the pedals, so you'd sort of end up attached to the bike, and it's a bit of sort of... you know, it's a bit of untangling, really, to get yourself up again. Having said that, it's how most bikes will probably come with those sort of cages and no toe clips. You can pedal those flat pedals perfectly effectively. You don't get the same pull on the pedals, but you can certainly push down on them, and they'll do until you're confident. And you can upgrade something else. And then if you wanted to go for the clipless version, you definitely need to practice a little bit because we've all fallen off, haven't we? When we think we've got it cracked, we take the wrong foot out of the pedal and lean to the side with the foot that's still in the pedal and fall off. Usually at traffic lights where there's lots of stationary traffic watching you. What about shoes then? If we're not having clipless pedals, what would be your chosen shoe to wear for cycling?
For not having pedals.
For not having clipless pedals.
Yeah. Again, it depends. You might be in a position where you might have a mountain bike and you've just got a sort of like mountain bike type shoe, which you possibly could wear with on the flat pedals. You could just wear your running shoes that you're going to be running in and just use those. Mm. So I think it comes down to the... You know, what's the objective of doing the triathlon? You know, it's, you know, certainly the first few triathlons that you do, you're not there looking to break any speed records, are you?
No. And so on that basis then, equally, if you were just going around to meet the challenge, see if you could do it, have a bit of a laugh with your friends, there wouldn't be really that much need to invest in any high tech or fancy cycle clothing either, would they? You could. I mean, you might need to buy a pair of shorts that have got a little bit of padding for comfort. Yeah. But if you've got a hardened up derriere, you can actually ride in a pair of board shorts or a pair of running shorts if you choose.
Yeah. Because the primary objective really is a positive participant experience, isn't it? Mm. It's not about the performance per se. It's more that the person doing the race is going to have a positive experience. Obviously, that's where safety and a few of the other little things, probably not in a sprint, getting your nutrition right. That's more pertinent to an Ironman event. But how many Ironman events have you seen and people are doing their first triathlon? So again, it's that would be important. But yeah, no, to just have that positive participant experience is just buying the right sort of equipment or having the right sort of equipment that isn't going to be negative on the day. You know, okay, you're wearing a wetsuit and then you've seen people with almost like, you know, the rash on the neck because they didn't know any different or whatever. So it's I think we can all help other people as well and give them that little bit of advice, can't they? Like share the stick of whatever it is that you put on your neck, with somebody else. You know, it doesn't harm, does it?
No, and I suppose one of the most valuable things that nobody can buy, but a lot of experienced athletes have, is that knowledge and experience. And just sharing that with somebody who's new is as much of a benefit to them as giving them an expensive bike or an expensive wetsuit.
Yeah, because imagine coming out of the swim with their neck all cut up. Well, you know, it's well, the rest of the race might not be particularly enjoyable, but, you know, the next 24 hours might be particularly uncomfortable as well. So,
So what we're saying on the bike is you could borrow a bike or you could buy a secondhand bike. Those secondhand marketplaces that you talked about have lots of secondhand bikes. You'd still want to go through the same process of getting it thoroughly checked over, making sure it hasn't been crashed and resprayed and somebody's trying to fob you off with an unsafe bike. You do need a helmet, but you need a helmet that meets safety requirements for the event organizers, not something that's going to give you the least drag. At least you don't need that to start with. You can ride in a pair of running shoes, or you could wear a pair of those firm-soled mountain bike shoes that aren't going to flex as much. And you could do that on platform pedals. So in terms of kit, you could start out with a pair of board shorts and a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Or you could buy, again, you mentioned Aldi, they've probably got a pair of cycle shorts on sale there for £10 that have got enough padding in them to give you a little bit more comfort while you're riding around.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
On the run, most people have got a pair of tennis shorts or a pair of shorts and a t-shirt they could run in. Most people have got a pair of socks. And so all we need is a pair of running shoes that are fit for purpose, really, i.e. they're not falling apart.
Yeah, unlike the silver shadows.
And they're designed for running. So you could do it in a pair of green flash, but probably best if you got a pair of running shoes. But you can go to any sports retailer these days and find plenty of choices there.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think that'd be an issue. And there seems to be enough budget sports retail outlets where you can buy a decent enough shoe at a reasonable price these days.
So when we sort of get down to brass tacks, you really don't need to be spending an awful lot of money to get into triathlon. To have your first experience and decide whether this is something you want to pursue with a little more seriousness. If you were going to be preparing yourself for a triathlon with a bit more effort and application, you do need to do some training. Let's talk about some of the kit you might need if you were going to train regularly. Is it any more than all of the things we've just discussed, do you think?
No, certainly for training, definitely not. You know, you can get away with the bare minimum. You don't need all of the stuff that gets, you know, spoken about. I mean, I would, you know, my background, etc., you wouldn't expect to be seeing me going to my local swimming pool health club. And the kit bag I use is, you know, my bag for life, which I bought at Aldi. You know, because they're great kit bags, you know. So you don't need this all singing and dancing triathlon specific kit bag that costs like, well, I don't know, I've never bought one, so I don't know how much they cost. You know, just need two or three of these bags in the back of your car, one for your swimming kit, one for your run kit, one for your bike kit, and they're fantastic.
The green party will be ecstatic with you, Graham. There was a piece on the radio yesterday that said that there was 1.7 million or 1.7 billion bags for life bought last year, and you know they're urging the supermarkets to put the cost up now because people are really buying them and only using them a few times and throwing them away. So they're not much better than the original plastic bags we used to get for free. But clearly, you're a model citizen and you're getting the most use out of yours for making sure they're fit for multi purposes.
Yeah, and I'm sure in the comments we could have 101 different uses for these bags.
Mm. Yeah, well. A good one there then. So I'm thinking, when I'm thinking about kit and things that people like to have for training, if as we get into the winter, you might want to have a warmer jacket for running and riding. You might want to have a pair of over leggings to put on to stop your legs getting cold. Probably best if you don't wear a pair of baggy tracksuit trousers. Yeah. But again, there's still a pair of tracksuit trousers and a warm winter jacket and a rain jacket over the top will suffice to start with, won't it? You don't need to wait until you've got lots of expensive gear before you go out on your bike.
No, definitely not. You can. There's lots of things. I'm sure you just got to be a little bit, think about it, be a little bit creative. You won't necessarily look the part, as they say. But you know, depending on whether you care about that, it shouldn't really matter.
Let's talk about upgrading then. So Scott Harriman, our questioner, said that he had started off with the basic equipment and he'd upgraded as he went on through the years, getting more and more experience. So let's think of our example person. They've done their first triathlon. They've done the second one. They've maybe done a season using all this basic kit we suggested. And they've got a little bit of money set aside. But where would you be looking to spend your money first if you were going to upgrade?
For a race, my first port of call is making sure that if I'm looking at upgrading for speed, would be to have a very tight-fitting, aerodynamic race suit, preferably with sleeves down to the elbow. But again, you go, well, those might be, you know, you can spend nearly £300 on that type of suit. But I know there are people out there, there's manufacturers out there, you can get suits with almost the same quality and performance for under £100. So it is possible to get those race suits. I know your friend from Racekin, they do that, and I'm pretty certain they're not the most expensive suits in the world, are they?
No, they're from Yorkshire, so they're good value.
Yeah, you get a free box of Yorkshire tea with them, I believe. Or have I got that wrong?
I'm not sure, but maybe that's a good suggestion. It would be an equivalent to the Haribo you get from some other people.
Yes, that's it. Yeah, I think we mentioned them earlier, didn't we?
We did,
So that's where I would start as far as spending a bit of money to improve performance, because if you are doing it in your baggy T-shirt, that's certainly going to slow you down. So I'm not going to quote how much that will save you in speed over, say, an Olympic distance, but it would be quite significant. And then quickly, I would be going to, you know, as far as spending money for what you're going to get back in improved performance, I would then go to a helmet and getting, you know, a decent aerodynamic helmet. I would spend a bit of time. This doesn't necessarily cost you money. Spend a bit of time on looking at your position on the bike. So then people might immediately go, well, I need a time trial bike now for that, or a triathlon specific bike. No, you don't. I would buy a nice pair of clip-ons for your road bike and get your position sorted, because that will be a much cheaper way of going a lot quicker. So, and what is, as you mentioned earlier, it's the person on the bike that creates the most drag, so that's the most inhibiting part of the athlete and bike together that you've got to look at. So look at all things to do with the person on the bike, position, helmet and clothing. And only then do you go to looking at the bike and the expensive bits that come with expensive bikes.
You mentioned yesterday that you'd sold a time trial bike that you'd had and you hadn't really ridden it, and yet you were still only able to sell it for about half of what its retail value was when you got it.
Yeah, I mean, it was the retail value was £4,500. I purchased it in a sale for £2,500, and I put it on for about £2,200, and eventually I sold it for £1,900. Mm. I was almost like, it felt like I was giving it away. But I had to get rid of it for personal reasons, and it's gone. And it's sort of what it shows me really, that there isn't a massive value in secondhand bikes.
Yep.
As soon as it's secondhand, then you know they don't seem to be worth a lot of money, and they soon get updated and outdated. So as far as buying really good bikes that are going to do the job, especially when triathlon time trial bikes, there's a lot of bikes out there that aren't used a lot and don't have a lot of miles on them, you can pick up some really good bargains.
Mm. Yeah, and I think that's the point, is you don't need to have the 2020 model. I mean, once if you bought a new bike in 2019, there will be a 2020 model that's upgraded from it. It'll be upgraded in a small way. It might just be the paint finish
They're all just going to disc brakes.
Yeah, in terms of the performance, there'll be very little difference. So you could, at this time of year, there's a lot of manufacturers who are selling off their 2019 stock ready to make way for 2020 stock. So you can still pick up a new bike at a bargain price. There's probably quite a few. We're recording this on Black Friday. So if you were to look sharp, you know, this podcast will be out a few days after Black Friday, but those offers will still be on now at the end of the year. So you could get a new bike in a deal. Feel like you have to pay the new price. And you and I were talking about our original bikes at the start of the show. I met Dave Scott at a conference in Boulder, and because he lives locally, he brought his Ironman Hawaii winning bike. Must have been 1987, I think. Yeah. And it's effectively a road racing bike. You know, it's got those downshift derailleurs you talked about. It's got those huge, great big brake cables that used to stick way out of the brake hoods on top of the handlebars. It probably had 10, maybe had 12 speed then, but that would have been it. Dave Scott managed to power a bike like that to win 6 Ironman races. And he was riding at, 23, 24 miles an hour. So I'm sure I could go faster on equipment now, but back then those bikes still transported those guys forward at an incredible velocity. So please don't be thinking that you are losing out if you're not spending top money buying the best bike. You're not. Okay. So what we're saying then is if you are going to spend money on something, you know, look at the bike is the area where you are going to spend most time. So directing your first investment towards that would result in your biggest time savings and improvements. And because we know that the rider creates all the drag or most of the drag on the bike, investing money in improving your bike position and your clothing is going to be your first investment. Yeah.
Yeah. And always remembering to invest a bit of time in cleaning your bike beforehand and making sure it's fully functional and the chain is not old and worn and full of muck. You know, a really good, not well worn chain, clean. You know, that can be worth quite a lot on Olympic distance.
It can be worth as many. It can be worth as many watts as those large pulley wheels that you talked about yesterday in our phone call chat.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, which look great, by the way, but and do save you a few watts. But if you've got a mucky chain and clogged up cassette, you can save just as many watts by just giving those a bit of a TLC, can't you?
Yeah, and even, again, I know for a fact that with tests done, even if you don't want to buy any specific bike oil or lubricant for your bike, if you've got olive oil in the cupboard, that's just as good.
That's good to hear, because I have resorted to using olive oil occasionally when I haven't had any lubricant available for my bike. So I'm glad you said that. I feel a little better about the fact that I didn't really mistreat my
probably somewhere you were 15 miles into a training ride in the middle of Mallorca, realizing that your chain was in desperate need of lubricant. You think, well, how long before we get to the coffee stop? And the one good thing about most of the cafes in New York is not only the coffee is fantastic, there's always a little plastic tube of olive oil hanging around somewhere, isn't it, in the cafe?
Yeah, indeed. So there's a maintenance tip from our resident bike mechanic as well for you. So we'd probably look at investing in the bike after we've done that. If you wanted to upgrade and you had the money, you'd want to upgrade in your bike. If you were going to do open water swims in the UK, there aren't many people that really want to put up with having to swim in UK lakes, in particularly the start of the summer or the end of the summer, without a wetsuit. So you probably would want to invest in one of those.
Yeah.
My own advice on this is, the entry-level suits that you can get from most manufacturers these days, which are at a pretty good price, are still 100 times better than my first triathlon-specific wetsuit I bought back in 1989. I think it was a Quintana Roo. It was a good wetsuit at the time, but it doesn't it can't hold a candle to the basic entry level wetsuits from even, as I said earlier, from even some of the lesser known brands, never mind the top brands. So you definitely don't need to go spending £500 or £600 on a wetsuit to get started. And as we've already said, there's plenty of places where you can get them secondhand. You may even be able to borrow one first and at least get an idea of whether the right size of the right sizing before you invest your money.
Yeah, and I again, the marketeers do a great job in trying to sell some of these suits with the anti-roll panels, extra grip forearm, pitch this, do this, catch the water panel, and then you're paying like £500 or £600 for a suit. Personally, I don't think they work anyway.
Mm. Well, and let's face it, most of the pros wear them because their sponsors give them the best wetsuits. Yeah. And if you put the pros in, you know, one of the basic level models and timed them, there wouldn't be a great deal of difference, would there, in the speed of those suits through the water?
No.
Okay. So lots of opportunities then to get wetsuits and bikes and bike equipment. The things that I would probably be spending money on if I was going to buy new, I think I might. I wouldn't buy the top of the range helmet. I would buy a helmet I would buy one that had multi-purpose, so I could use it for commuting if I was doing that. I could use it for time trialing, and I could use it for racing cycling. And I would probably buy a decent helmet because I'm thinking more about the protection for my head. I think I'd probably invest in a pair of, if I was going to be doing lots of cycling, I probably would invest in a pair of shorts with reasonable quality chamois.
Yeah.
Because that contact point, if it's not comfortable, becomes, a literal sore, but it also becomes a bit of a sore in your head. It's something that eats away at you as you're riding along. You're just not sitting comfortably, and it grows irritant.
Talking about those contact points, then you do want to find a saddle that fits you.
Yeah.
That can be difficult. I think there's enough people out there that they've got a whole range of saddles, which sometimes you can borrow and try or whatever. Mm. Or just ask people.
Yeah. Going on, talking about training then, I still agree with your original point that there isn't much you need other than a pair of Speedos and a set of goggles in order to swim train. Most pools will have a pool boy. You might be able to buy some hand paddles, but I don't think they're entirely necessary. Neither do I think fins are entirely necessary. A lot of swimmers have become very good without those bits of equipment. On the bike, if you're going to be cycling in all weathers, there's a comment that cyclists are fond of saying, which is there's no such thing as bad weather, just bad clothing. Yeah. So cycling in the winter can also get uncomfortable.
That originated out of Yorkshire as well, didn't it?
It probably did, yes, because we do have bad weather here and good clothing. So, but the point being, if you can make yourself comfortable, you'd want a warm jacket. You can get yourself a little over jacket that's waterproof. Again, you want something that's functional, not expensive. And there are some brands out there that position themselves as having all of this wonderful technology. And yes, their clothing looks fantastic, but I've used some of that clothing and I've used some of the lesser known brands and the budget brands. And really the difference is in the marketing. Essentially, it's not in the actual performance and the comfort of those products.
Yeah, I would agree wholeheartedly on that.
Okay, right. So I think we've got cycling cracked then. There will be people screaming out, what about heart rate monitors? What about power meters? What about an indoor trainer? We will come on to those at the end. Let's just consider running now. So are you a pronator? Are you a heel striker? Are you a midfoot runner, a forefoot runner, a supinator? How important is it for you to buy a pair of top of the range Nike Vaporflies that weigh 4 grams and save you X amount of time? In fact, is that an appropriate shoe for most novice beginning triathletes?
No, I don't think so. I think you've only got to look at any, there's so much information out there, but I think for starting out for running, the advice is you know, a good mid-range shoe that makes sure it fits comfortably. And most running shops have the ability to advise accordingly on that, I would suspect, which again is why, you know, go to your, like, go to, you know, support the local running shop where they'll have somebody who can give you that advice, because sometimes you go, you know, we're all guilty of buying stuff online and then some of these shops disappear, don't they? But it's often quite handy just to go down to the local running shop and get that advice for, you know, the shoe that is going to be comfortable, it fits, and it's not too expensive, it's not the cheapest. It's probably like buying when you buy a bottle of wine at a restaurant. Don't go for the house, just go for the one above the house red, and you'll probably get a really nice glass of wine.
Interestingly though, my brother used to own a restaurant. He said you can always be pretty confident about the house wine because that's what the restaurants sell most of, and they're not going to sell you the worst wine as a house wine. But anyway, next time we go out for dinner, we can try that one. You have the next one up, and I'll have the house wine, and we'll do a taste test.
Yes.
In terms of running shoes, again, marketing would tell you that this shoe is better for you than that shoe. Ultimately, and a bit like wetsuits really in terms of branding, you could buy the most popular brand out there, the one that wins the 220 wetsuit of the year competition, but if that wetsuit doesn't fit you, it's no good. Equally, you can have the most popular shoe out there, and if that shoe doesn't fit you, then it's not really that good for you. So what we're saying is, do your homework, go to the local run shop, try on lots of shoes, find the one that's comfortable with you. Don't be tempted by marketing or color or, you know, all of the other spurious information out there. Buy the one that suits your foot and is a comfortable size for you.
Yeah, and often you can get last year's model at half the price.
Yeah. And remember that when something claims to be the fastest bike or the fastest suit or the fastest shoe, it's usually because of the person wearing it or using it, not because the shoe. If you put a running shoe on the floor on its own, it's actually very slow. Well,
yeah, no, you could line them all. You could actually line them all up, couldn't you? And they're probably all the same speed.
I've not seen them do that test on Global Triathlon Network yet. We maybe need to suggest that as one of their group tests next time. Okay, so in terms of running kit, then again, you can run in anything, can't you? As long as you've got a pair of shoes or a pair of, you know, longer bottoms to wear in the winter. If you wanted to buy some running specific kit, I guess if you're running through the woods and it gets a bit muddy, if you've got baggy clothing, it can get a bit claggy and it can feel a bit heavy if they get wet. So you could buy a pair of running tights. You might want to buy a base layer for the winter to keep you warm, both on the bike and for running. You might want to buy a rain top. But again, the budget clothing manufacturers are able to provide you with exactly what you need at a fraction of the cost of some of the heavily marketed products.
Yeah.
And if you watch Graham run, you'll probably find that he is a perfect advocate of somebody wearing that particular kit.
In what way?
Well, you don't buy top brands, do you?
Oh, no, definitely not, no. A lot of the time, if you're doing an Ironman, it doesn't really matter because you're going to be walking most of the way anyway. if you're doing an Ironman and it's your first triathlon, I wouldn't worry too much because, as I say, the likelihood is you will be walking a lot of that run. So, you know, you often see these shoes that are, you know, that only last up to a half marathon, and, you know, and after that you went, well, actually probably doesn't matter because, you know, you're going to be spending so much time walking, which both you and I know, especially if you're slightly, we're of the older generation now doing triathlon, that occurs quite regularly, doesn't it?
I think in our last race together, Graham, we passed each other twice. You were slightly ahead of me. I know that I was running when I saw you and you were running when you saw me, but I think that just before you realised I'd spotted you, you were walking. You started running like I did when you saw me and thought, I better not let him see me walking.
I admit, I walked 75% of that race.
Yeah. Well, you were a bit faster than me, so that means I must have walked 80% of it.
No, something like that. Yeah, maybe. But anyway, let's move on.
Well, the top and the tail of all this is, whether you're a novice starting out in triathlon for your first time, you're in your first season, or you're moving through gathering experience and upgrading, there are certain things that you need to get started, which doesn't need to cost the earth. There are certain things that you might want to upgrade to, which don't need to cost the earth either. And there's also some things that are not essential. They do add perhaps to the training experience. They might add to your understanding of what's happening. But again, if you buy a smart watch, that isn't going to make you swim, bike, or run faster. It might well record what you're doing, but unless you're going to use that data for something useful, be able to analyze it and then pinpoint what it's telling you in order to train your training for the future, that data that you collect is actually, you know, fairly useless, isn't it?
Yeah, and I definitely agree with that. You know, but I think it comes back to it's all to do with marketing, isn't it? Mm. You know, and we all get caught up in that, and then as Scott actually pointed out in his email, that most people's recommendations tends to be towards the more expensive equipment, and I guess gadgets at the same time come into that category. Mm. Not actually necessary.
If I was going to buy one gadget, I'm looking outside now. It was pretty cold yesterday, and today it was mostly icy. I'm not a great fan. Where I live, it's fairly busy on the roads. There are times, certainly in the winter, when I'm not a great fan of riding outdoors. You know, the more times you fall off and get hurt, the more you realize that an older body tends to break more easily, and that if you can avoid breaking it, you're a lot happier. So I ride an indoor trainer now. If I was going to make one investment for training, that would probably be at top of my list, would be an indoor trainer. Most entry-level models now are 100 times better than the first magnetic turbo trainer that I bought. Yeah. 20 years ago, which was just fine at that time. I know plenty of my friends who are cyclists who don't have turbo trainers. They use rollers. And, yeah, you know, you might be paying a couple of £100 for a set of new rollers. You could get a second-hand pair. But if you wanted to find a way of enhancing not only your fitness, but also your balance and your biking skills, learning to ride a pair of rollers would be probably where it's at.
Yeah, no, I can completely agree with your first recommendation of an indoor trainer, whether it's a smart trainer or not, because I think you actually said that, you know, with the bad weather, with the amount of traffic, I don't know how people who live in the centre or quite central in London, how they even go out and ride their bike outdoors, because I couldn't contemplate that myself. And they're a braver person than I ever would be. I think with the advent of platforms like Trainer Road and Zwift, and you see it advertised on television, Peloton, etc., and the Watt bikes, I think now, whereas we've seen an explosion of cyclists on the road, I think we're going to see a reverse trend in the next 10 years, where a lot more people are just going to be going back indoors again. And I can almost just see a lot of car drivers like putting both arms in the air and celebrating, because there'll be, and obviously then there'll be less of this confrontation with the motorist.
I'm just thinking there, Graham, that if you were a conspiracy theorist, you might think that Zwift was a concept invented by motorists to get cyclists off the road, wouldn't you?
Well, it was.
Was it?
No, I know. I don't know. But but that would be quite funny, wouldn't it, if it was?
Yeah. And just on that point, you talk about Peloton, you talk about the Watt bike. A lot of gyms now are offering classes on Watt bikes. So if indoor trainers are noisy. If you live in the city and you're in a flat, you've got residents that live downstairs below you, getting up at 5 a.m. and going on your turbo trainer before you go to work is probably going to be met with some sort of discord and an upset for your neighbors. So then going to the gym and taking part in a Watt bike class has benefits. I'm not a great fan of spinning classes. However, if that was your only option, then it's better than nothing, and it's safe, and it's also a social environment. So you get motivation from that. You get some social interaction. So again, that is an alternative in the face of nothing at all, really, isn't it?
There's indoor cycling is an immense benefit one way or another, which
you do have to. If you're going to ride outdoors, there is going to be a time when you need to get outdoors and do some riding, because learning how to deal with the wind, different road conditions, dealing with motorists, learning how to climb hills and descend hills is important for your own safety in the race. So you are going to have to do some outdoor riding at some time, but no need to expose yourself to more risk than is necessary, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And just I'll just put this out because I don't hear it very often. A good tip: if you're going to ride your bike outdoors and you're going to plan your own route, make sure — and most routes are circular unless you just go down the road, turn around and come back — is go left-handed on your route, so that you are always turning left, and then you won't be faced with having to turn right and be crossing traffic in order to do so. So just straight again, you're lowering the risk of potentially having an accident if you design your route left-handed.
Good call as always, Graham. So I think we've pretty much got to the end of what we can say there about doing triathlon on a budget. I'll just summarize. Feel free to dive in if I've missed anything. If you're starting for the first time, try a pool swim. That way you only need a swimsuit and a pair of goggles. You can take part on any bike, and if you haven't got a bike, see if you can borrow one first. If that's not an option, try buying a second-hand one. Just give it a proper check over, maybe take it to the bike shop first. Anybody that's honest and upstanding will probably be happy for you to do that. It is important that you have a helmet. So if you probably are going — and I wouldn't get a second-hand helmet, I'd get a new helmet, and I would make sure that you get one that meets the minimum safe — well, I would get one that meets the safety recommendations, and then buy a good make, but perhaps buy the entry-level one. You can ride a bike with running shoes. You don't need fancy pedals. You can wear a t-shirt. You can wear a pair of board shorts, and you can run in the same kit. So that's all you need to get started. If you're going to upgrade, think about the bike first, and on the bike, think about how you can upgrade yourself as a human. Think about your bike position. Think about the clothing you wear and creating less drag by having tighter fitting clothing. If you're going to buy a bike, a road bike is a good start point, because that also means you can use it for commuting and other things. You're not limited. You can buy a second-hand bike, so look out for those. There's marketplaces online that you can get those. If you're going to do open water swimming, definitely buy a wetsuit, but don't overlook the entry-level wetsuits, and don't ignore the fact that there's second-hand wetsuits out there. Get a pair of running shoes that fits you and is comfortable, and you just feel okay wearing it. And don't worry about the brand. Just buy the ones that are comfortable and that fit you. In terms of gadgets, yes, they're nice to have. Are they necessary? No. But if you live in the city, or you live somewhere where the weather's a bit inclement or dark, particularly in the winter, you might want to invest in something that allows you to train indoors. But if you can't do that, you can always go to the gym and do some spin classes. You could buy aero bars. You could buy a time trial bike. I think those are upgrades for people who've really decided that triathlon is for them. And even then, it's not necessary to go top line when you're buying.
Yeah. And Scott mentioned in his email about the rising costs of races.
Yeah.
Well, we only have to go back to, what is largely regarded as the first ever triathlon, which was in Hawaii, wasn't it, where a group of people were having that discussion about, you know, who's the best athlete, and they just literally rocked up one day and they swam across the bay, did the cycle ride, and then ran a marathon, didn't they? And that's the birth of triathlon. Well, there's nothing stopping anybody, a group of people getting together at the lake or the swimming pool. They do the swim, go out on the bike ride, and then do the run. And you can organize it yourself. You don't need anybody or any cost to do that. You might need a little bit of help from a partner or somebody. but it's all possible. You might even want to just time it so that you all get back within the half hour of a local half marathon event or a 10K race, and away you go. You know, going back to your card system, then you start that at the appropriate time and work it out from there.
Yeah, and on that, Graham, we talked about these events that have pool swims. We talked about supporting local bike shops and local running shops. You could also argue that we should be supporting local races as well. These are the races that have been designed for novices. They tend to be a lot cheaper. They tend to be a lot more friendly. They tend to be a lot easier to get to. You don't have to travel.
A lot of triathlon clubs put those races on, or did. I'm sure they still do.
Yeah, so there's hopefully, Scott, we've given you, and you know, your question wasn't just for you, it was for people who are just starting out the sport. Hopefully we've given you a lot of suggestions there to help people getting into the sport, or who are in it, who are on a budget. A lot of suggestions to help you get equipment that is going to enable you to complete triathlons and have fun. And no amount of expensive equipment really is going to add to the fun that you have when you're sharing that experience with a few friends. And I think that is something that I'd like to end on, Graham. I don't know if you've got anything to add. Is for me, the reason I've been in triathlon for over 30 years is because it allows me to have some experiences and some banter with friends, and it's a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah. Isn't that what life's about? Just creating great memories.
Yeah, well, there you go. Thanks for being on the show again, Graham. You always help me to create some great memories, and I'll hopefully we'll get some more good feedback, and we'll get you again on the show to talk about another interesting, maybe controversial subject.
Goodbye.
Thanks, Graham. Cheers now.
Bye.
Right then, that's a wrap for this week. Thanks again for listening. As always, I appreciate that you have plenty of choice out there in podcast land, so it does mean an awful lot to me when you come back regularly. If you enjoyed the podcast, please could you hop onto iTunes or Podbean and leave a rating and a comment if you can. Apparently, it's really good for the ratings, although to be absolutely honest with you, I have no idea how they work these things out. If you like the way I roll and you find some synergy with my approach to life and sport, maybe be interested in joining my SWAT Inner Circle training group. If you are, please just email beth@thetriathloncoach.com for more details. You can also use that email address to ask for my special free gift, which I have for you, which are my top 25 tips on how to be a high-performance human. Okay, that's all for this week. I'll be back next week with another great guest. So for now, enjoy the rest of your week.